The topic tonight is actually really a match if it's your first time, and I think it's a match if you've been here for years also, because what I'd like to do, and I try to do this at least once a year, is a kind of overview of the art of practice. Anthony DeMello, who's really one of the great teachers of the era, described in the Desert Fathers a dialogue. Is there anything I can do to make myself enlightened? The response, as little as you can do to make the sun rise in the morning. Then of what use are the spiritual exercises you prescribe? To make sure you're not asleep when the sun begins to rise, right? And I like that because in the wisdom traditions, all of them, including Buddhism, the basic understanding is that the sun that's rising, we have a natural radiance, a natural awareness, a natural loving, that's who we are. So that's already a given. And the path is really just about realizing that. It's like it's registering, that's what's here. So we practice so that we're available to what's always and already here. So tonight and next week we'll be exploring the art of practice and really exploring how we cultivate these two wings of presence. One of the wings is this recognizing, this seeing what's happening, what's here. It's kind of a wakefulness. And the other wing is the wing of the heart that embraces what we see. We'll be exploring that and really exploring how we need both. They are inextricable. And I'll be emphasizing formal sitting practice, but really it extends to really how we pay attention all the time. The starting place for the art of practice is our attitude. And the inquiry is really, how do I relate to meditation practice? That's the kind of the question. And from the get-go, what has become more and more clear to me is that beyond anything else, no matter how much we try to have any mastery over our experience, guide our mind, direct our mind, develop concentration, really work on all the different kind of paramis or perfections, the thing that most is the ground of a transformative practice is sincerity. It's a kind of innocence that's connected with, I care about this. It's sincerity, because anything else ends up torquing the practice. And the truth is that that's not how we often approach meditation practice, with this kind of sincere, I care about waking up, let me sit down, and I'm on my cushion. You know, it's not like that often. And we generally approach meditation practice much like we approach anything else we think we should do in our life. In other words, we transfer, our ego transfers into spiritual life exactly our habits and patterns as we approach whether we go running every day or keep our diet right or do good deeds. We have the same, it's not like we all of a sudden shift. It's the same ego. It transplants. So many of us, our relationship with practices, we feel in some way inadequate around the quality or the quantity of it. We might not do it at all. It's not like I'm sitting here thinking everyone's got like their own practice going. Many people don't. Some go in and out. Sometimes it's the opposite. We feel real puffed up about our practice. It's like we're a special person. We're into that special personhood thing. So our ego gets involved. I think it's a really central inquiry. How do we cherish and honor practice right in the heart of our lives and not have it get contracted by judgment, by striving, by all the ways that it gets contracted. So let me begin tonight. I'm going to have you go in and out of, as I often do, trying things out. Let's begin with this kind of checking in, if you will. And that just means really, for most of us, closing our eyes to start. And the question for you is, what is your relationship with practice? How do you approach formal meditation practice? And what's your attitude? And then in that, you might sense, is there a shoulding, where there's some striving or a dragging yourself, a half-heartedness? A mechanicalness? Or maybe you find you don't do it so much. Is there kind of an intimidation, like it's too hard, or it's you don't do it well enough? It's frustrating. So some feeling of like falling short or flawed. Or maybe as you check in, there's a real willingness. There's a sincerity that you really want to deepen your attention and wake up. Maybe there isn't judgment. But just sense for yourself, and don't add judgment to what you find. As you consider, for those that do sit, have a sitting practice, you know, what it's like when you approach it, you might even sense, so what would it really mean to deepen a quality of sincerity in formal practice? And opening your eyes. Now, some of you are familiar with Zen, and there can be an external appearance in Zen of being kind of intense and demanding. And one of the stories I always love and I love sharing is when Thich Nhat Hanh, who is a Zen master but a little different than some of the other traditional ones, was asked to visit the San Francisco Zen Center. And the question the students there had for him was, well, how do we improve? And his response, you guys get up too early for one thing. You should get up a little later. And your practice is too grim. I have just two instructions for you this week. One is to breathe and one is to smile. You know? And isn't that perfect? I mean, we can get so grim in how we do things. And the grounds are really kind of lightheartedness. We can be serious in a sense of really intentional, but light. Now, that's I'm not speaking as if that's the way I always did it. I had I was in an ashram where it was pretty rigid, and there was a lot of competition. There was competition to see who would be the first in the sadhana room, the room where we'd gather, and you know, who looked like the, you know, the most samadhi-like yogi in the room. And I remember for some time we got up at 3:30 and we'd have cold showers and 2.5 hours of prayer and meditation and yoga. And I would get up an hour early, so I had a little more time to establish my samadhi. And part of it was I really liked altered states. I mean, I was a little bit of an altered states junkie. But, and also kind of a type A yogi, you know, I was kind of driven. Part of it was I liked being in there, and I knew people would quietly come in and take their places, but I was already there, you know. And so there's this kind of show-off thing that can happen for some people and for other, and then also with that some judgment, because I knew inside that I was going through all my petty neurotic stuff. It wasn't like the striving made me internally filled with radiance and light. And I also was very judgmental of other people that were sleeping in, you know. So my heart was not open. I wasn't at home. And over the years, I can say for myself, the single biggest shift in my practice is that I begin always with this inquiry, what really matters? I just right away, what is it about this? How come I'm doing this? What do I care about? And as soon as I begin realizing that this heart really longs to be free, and by that I mean really longs to love without withholding and longs to just really be present, when I can remember that, there is a kind of sincerity or realness that then I arrive in. And then the sitting might be one way or might be another, but it's not surrounded by judgment, and it's not held in a kind of mentality that's then scanning the world to see how other people are doing things. There's just more of a sense of kindness. So the ground of a transformative practice is how we're approaching it. And I'd say the reason on the Bodhisattva path, which is really the path of an awakening being, that everything starts with aspiration. The whole world is on the point of aspiration, is because if we connect with what we feel sincere about, that itself ends up carrying us home. That's the beginning. And then we look at, okay, so what are the components? What makes us, as DeMello described it in that Desert Father exchange, what makes it so that we'll be there for the rising sun? And I sometimes divide practice and the art of practice into two categories. And one are the kind of skillful means that help us get here. And then the other, I don't know if you can even call it practice. It's really a letting go and letting be. It's really that just stopping the controlling and just being awake, being that awakeness. So when we look at the getting here methods, the first of them, and we do that here each week, is being awake in our bodies, an embodied presence. And so now, even as I mentioned some of the ways that we get here in our bodies, you might just feel it for the moment, that we often will begin by just, I'll just say, kind of scan the body with your awareness. Are there areas of habitual holding? You know, and if I check my body, as soon as I say that, I can feel what my shoulders are doing. You know, that. So, okay, can you just, right now, if there's something that's obvious of holding, just let go a little. Usually, if we very consciously just soften the shoulders, the hands, and the belly, that itself helps bring us into the body. Part of establishing an embodied awareness, it helps to, the smile helps, because what it does is it loosens that whole fight-flight tension. So if you can just smile a little, breathe, soften. There's a Chinese word, song, and it means relaxation that's filled with awareness. Just explore that, song. And then the next instruction is, let your senses be awake. So what that means is that there's a listening attention. Listening to the sounds in the room and the more distant sounds. Listening to the whole moment. Listening and sensing the space in the room. As if you could smell and smell the entire space that's here. And feel it kinesthetically. feel the space inside with that listening receptivity. So this is the first part of arriving. You can mentally whisper the word "here" and let your senses be very awake, feeling the breath with your body's awareness right here. Now, continuing to listen, if you'd like to open your eyes, do so, but include the visuals, the shapes, the colors, again, senses awake. So that's part of being here. Now what happens is that we leave here very quickly. And so one of the most pervasive, skillful means or methods in all meditation systems is having some sort of an anchor so that when you go off in the trance of thoughts, you can re-arrive again. So that's, we select an anchor. Now, when you calm down some, you don't necessarily have to stay using an anchor. But it's really helpful initially when the mind is busy, because as long as the mind's busy, you're not going to be able to really be here. So what you'll hear me usually talking about is the breath as the primary anchor. But that's not the only one. You can use sounds. For some, if you keep softening the hands and you maybe feel your breath and the hands, that'll help you stay here or know that you're here. For some, including sounds helps to kind of create an openness. Just listen. And just relax into the space of awareness that listens. So when the mind drifts, we're thinking, we practice remindfulness. Okay, this is the tool. We notice we've been thinking, and the remindfulness is that kind of awareness says, okay, come home again. And the trick with remindfulness is to do it gently, to not judge, because we're not trying to vanquish thoughts. We're just trying to wake up out of the confines of thoughts. Let me just say a little bit more about thinking, because it's easy to turn thoughts into the enemy, and they're not. And how many moments, how the swaths of our day are we lost in thought? I mean, if you think back over today and just sense, you know, what it was like today, how many times did you pause and sense here, kind of here-ness, where you weren't kind of on your way, leaning forward, the thoughts tumbling forward, planning, remembering, worrying? I mean, how many moments? We get fixated on the stories of the world, the stories outside us that we're reading or listening to. A math teacher saw that Johnny wasn't paying attention in class. She called on him and said, "Johnny, what are 2, 4, 28, and 44? Johnny quickly replied, "CBS, NBC, HBO, and the Cartoon Network." So our mind, we just fixate, and you can see it, and you can see it in the culture. It's scary. Most of our addiction is to our inner dialogue. Most of it's to thoughts of the future. And most of it's to anticipating and figuring out what might go wrong and how to prevent it and how to get what we want. But I'd say a lot of it is worry thoughts. And just to say that thinking is necessary for survival and to be creative and communicate. This is not a put down of thinking, but how many moments are we spinning on worry thoughts when we could be here, you know? So meditation training is to have choice, so we can choose to be here and not on automatic worry thoughts. And I was thinking, that when you imagine flying, when we get on a plane, and initially they give, you know, the safety information. And imagine if throughout the whole flight, they just kept rerunning what to do in an emergency, And some of you might remember, I thought this is great, this is a collection of some of the safety lecture and announcements that have been heard on flights in recent years. One of them, your seat cushions can be used for flotation, and in the event of an emergency water landing, please take them with our compliments. Another one, weather at our destination is 50 degrees with some broken clouds, but they'll try to have them fixed before we arrive. Thank you, and remember, nobody loves you or your money more than Southwest Airlines. Part of a flight attendant's arrival announcement. We'd like to thank you folks for flying with us today. And the next time you get the insane urge to go blasting through the skies in a pressurized metal tube, we hope you'll think of us here at U.S. Airways. Then after a real crusher of a landing in Phoenix, the flight attendant came on with, "Ladies and gentlemen, please remain in your seats until Captain Crash and the crew have brought the aircraft to a screeching halt up against the gate. And once the tire smoke is cleared and the warning bells are silenced, we'll open the door and you can pick your way through the wreckage to the terminal." And finally, from a Southwest Airlines employee, "There may be 50 ways to leave your lover, but there are only 4 ways out of this airplane." So it's fun to play with these things, but the truth is, if we watch our own minds and how we rehearse for things, how we plan what we're going to say, how we run through what's up and coming that could go wrong, we are in a trance of anxiety that is perpetually fueled by our thoughts. So the practice is to recognize when we're off in our cocoon, that kind of familiar cocoon of thinking, and in that recognition, just to pause. In fact, it's really useful not to that quickly say, okay, go back to the breath, but just pause. Rediscover the space of here. Just to relax, become present. And one of the biggest breakthroughs we can get is that our thoughts are just thoughts. They're not the reality. The difficulty is that we're addicted to thinking and we believe our thoughts. In fact, when I, at retreats, when somebody in an interview comes and in some way says, you know, I'm getting it, that I'm not my thoughts, I don't have to believe my thoughts, that is really a sign of a shift in a sense of reality. One yogi said recently, "Oh, I lost my train of thought. How delightful." You know. So the instructions are, be quiet and don't believe your thoughts, and don't believe your thoughts, and really don't believe your thoughts. It's amazing. You know, Joseph Goldstein, one of my teachers from IMS, used to say that, he said, "Do you want to think or be free?" So I'm saying this in the art of practice because part of the art is to our relationship with this kind of incessant inner dialogue, and to know it's natural and it happens in everybody. As the kind of standing joke at these retreats, some of these retreats are, what if all of our thoughts were broadcasted on loudspeakers, and so we're just hearing everybody's thoughts coming through loudspeakers. It's that impersonal. So what if we could begin to, when thoughts are useful, have them, let them guide us, but not believe them as reality, and have the capacity to wake up from them, to pause, and to be here, come back to presence. So one of the great skillful means is to notice we've drifted, arrive again, and in time sense that the mind begins to calm. You know, it's like any body of water, that if the winds of thought just keep on blowing, it gets rough and it's stirred up. And when we begin to quiet it down, you can actually begin, the sediment settles. You know, you can begin to see more clearly to the bottom. I ran in the summer to a medic that had been in New Orleans after Katrina, and she was a meditator. And she described how, you know, she had spent all these years learning how to just clear her thoughts and just come into some stillness. And she said she was there, and she'd be in these situations that were horrifying and overwhelming. And if she let herself think about how many people she wasn't going to get to and how tragic it was, if she let her mind think too much, she wouldn't have been able to respond. So she would just breathe, and she was definitely used her breath. And just she just had already had the knack of being able to quiet, and it just allowed her to respond in the moment. That's all she could do, is just respond just this much. And if there was a mantra, it's just this much. Just this, just this. So the key in returning, okay, thinking, is the kind of friendliness, not to batter away the thoughts, but just to let go back into here, right here. St. Francis de Sales says, what we need is a cup of understanding, a barrel of love, and an ocean of patience. Bring yourself back to the point quite gently. And even if you do nothing during the whole of your hour, but bring your heart back 1,000 times, though it went away every time you brought it back, your hour would be very well employed. Okay, so this is one of the skillful means, to just have this intention to wake up out of thoughts, so that, as Thich Nhat Hanh says, we can keep our appointment with life. And that's really what we're here for. So we'll practice a little, just this waking up out of thought. And as you sit in a way to deepen your attention, begin with the first, what we started with, just sense a kind of sincerity of just choosing or caring about being here. You know, may this be part of waking up this heart and mind. Just that simple. And take some moments to establish an embodied presence, to feel your breath, to soften if there's areas of tightening. And then for now, we'll just, with the skillful means of waking up out of thoughts, sometimes the image is like a cat at a mouse hole, just kind of waiting or noticing. Ah, is there going to be a head that appears in the hole? Is there a thought that's going to arise? So you might play with that for a moment, just sitting in the quiet. Just noticing when they appear. See if you can notice the difference between here and when a thought starts playing out. You can ask, am I dreaming? Am I thinking? Am I here? Let your simple intention be to notice thoughts, sound bites, images, memories, comments, just to notice. And when you do, to pause and re-relax back into here-ness, right here. Notice the difference between thoughts and being here. So these are the basic techniques in terms of getting here. Remembering what we care about, establishing an awakeness in our body, relax, senses awake, and then remindfulness, noticing when we've drifted, arriving again. Let me just check in with you and see if there's any questions so far on the getting here part, and then the next piece, we'll see how much time we have, is really the practice of mindfulness itself. Let me just check in. Any questions? Yeah, please, and speak pretty loudly since we don't have mics. What can you use as an anchor if you're ADD? That's a wonderful question, because the very nature, I mean, this is all about paying attention. And most of us are ADD in our own ways. We all have our ways of being ADD. And if not, we're obsessive or we're caught in, you know. You experiment with perhaps two anchors that feel most pleasant and comfortable to you. Now, it might be that one anchor is feeling your hands, because that's usually a pretty easy one to soften in your hands. Move them a little and soften. You might even find, for some people that are ADD, is a few words of metta help. It might be, breathing in, relaxing, breathing out, letting go. Just something to help really connect you with the moment. So experiment. And just see what lets you most remember you're here. Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah. Anyone else? Please know if you have a question, many others are going to have that same question, I promise. Yeah, please. The question is, I get so relaxed when I'm listening to you, my hypnotic dribble, you know. I'm being playful, but yeah, so it's a really good question. So what happens when we get really relaxed? And I wonder from you, when you're meditating on your own, do you get, does that happen? Trust me, you're not alone. So okay, so let's, whether you're on your own or whether you're listening to me and you get sleepy, let's talk about that a little, because, you know, the Buddha described, and this is true for all the meditative traditions, there are a basic cluster of challenging energies that make it really hard to really be fully present. And one of them is when we have a lot of craving. I have to have, I want. And another is when there's a lot of resistance. I don't like. There's some, like, maybe physical pain in the body. It's very hard to just be here. The third is called sloth and torpor. Isn't that a great name? And that's the energy of tiredness. The other two I'll mention are restlessness. Any of you ever feel restless when you're here? I see a few nodding heads. And then the last is doubt, which is, this stuff doesn't work, or I'm not cut out for this. And that makes it very hard to be present. So with sleepiness, there's a few different ways to respond to it. There are some skillful means, which are open your eyes. There's no law that you need to meditate with your eyes closed. If there were, that would mean that the rest of our life when we're walking around wasn't meditative, right? So open your eyes. Many times people stand up when they're meditating because it gives more energy. Sit up a little straighter. Take a few full breaths. I find listening, but listening beyond a voice, just listening to sound perks up, kind of opens my attention. So those are a few. But mostly, notice if you're judging the sleepiness. Like, this is bad, this shouldn't be happening, this means I'm a bad meditator, or maybe this means I'm going to miss out on tonight's benefits, you know. But notice if there's a judgment, and just note that, okay, judging, and then come back into a direct experience of, okay, so what's sleepiness like? And let that be included as anything else as part of the meditation. Don't make it wrong. Because if you can be here and be sleepy and have a quality of acceptance and notice a little about it, oh, heavy, kind of sinking, this, blurry, you're actually developing the main point in meditation, which is the capacity to be with life just as it is. Yeah, so thank you. Yeah, please. Ah, restlessness. I should have turned this into a hindrance talk. You know, there's a talk on the five difficult forces, but restlessness is a great one. You'll find that what comes up in meditation comes up in life. That when we're asked to be with what's here, if our tendency is to get kind of restless and wanting to be somewhere else or do something else, that energy will really show up. And the first thing, again, is just notice it. Know, oh, this is restlessness. Even name it with a kind of gentle, friendly, okay, restlessness. Because if you notice it, then you're not as identified with it. We're into mindfulness part right now. If you can note the energy that's going on, either with a word or just by recognizing it, in that moment, you're not so identified, so reactive. It's not me, it's just an energy. So the first step, name it, okay? The next part of it is get interested. Sit very, very still, and that's one of the skillful means with restlessness. Get very still, but get very interested. What does restlessness actually feel like? You know, as a constellation of sensations. So there's a quality of that you are the presence that's actually investigating and opening to restlessness, not judging it, just being with it. And then you're really doing the practice. With any of these difficult energies, they're not a problem. It's just like saying a certain weather system's a problem. They're the inner weather. And it's actually by being with the different weather systems that we discover the strength of heart and the vastness of presence that really is our homecoming. So they're all an opportunity. Like, I think of them as a kind of Dharma doorway. right home. It doesn't matter which one comes up. If you can, instead of saying, oh no, I'm stuck with this one, just go, oh, okay, it's doubt. And name it. Okay, the doubt that I'm not cut out for this. Okay, the doubt that, you know, this is never going to work. And then come back and just feel what it's like in your heart and your body. You're actually right there on the path in that moment. Thank you. Anyone else? Yeah, please. The questions about mantras and other kinds of tricks like that. It's actually, mantra is another object of concentration, just like if you can use the breath or parts of the body. And concentration, in other words, this remindfulness coming back, it can go very, very deep, because not only do you come back to an anchor like a mantra or the breath, but if you learn to really aim and sustain your attention, you can touch a tremendous amount of tranquility. And many people, their meditation is just that. It's really becoming absorbed in the object of concentration. In the kind of practice we do here, the focus on a mantra or the breath or something is really an assisting just to get us here. But then we don't stay fixing the attention. Rather, the training here is an open awareness that allows life to come and go so that we can really be with life just as it is and really see its nature. So ultimately, a mantra, if all we did was look at a mantra and fix on a mantra, you can get very peaceful, very quiet, but not the same type of insight. Somebody gave you a mantra. Yeah, so again, it's all an experiment. There's not one good kind of meditation and others are not as good. We really owe it to ourselves to find out what way of paying attention most brings you a kind of awakeness in the heart and a clarity in the mind. Yeah, thank you. Okay, any other burning questions for right now? And I'm going to have to redesign what we're doing, but that's okay. Yeah, please. She said, for me, noticing that I've stopped thinking starts the thinking again. It's so true. Everything trips off thinking again. So, in a way, notice it, then notice that there's thinking again. It's not just the noticing, it's if you notice and then without any yay or boo, there's just a, okay, pause. And just establish again a very relaxed presence. What'll happen is gradually you'll settle more into the presence and you'll know the difference between that and the thoughts. And that's the whole deal. It's not to get rid of thoughts. That would be like saying stop secreting enzymes, you know? Really, we're designed to think. It's to not be lost in the trance. And it sounds to me like you're actually getting more free from the trance just by noticing. Yeah, thank you. Anything else? Yeah, please. Yeah, when I clear my mind and get in touch with the body, there's this kind of physiologic twitching. That happens to a lot of people, that as we begin to quiet the mind, there's kind of releases in the body, and they can be twitches. There can be pain. Sometimes emotional stuff comes up. It's almost, imagine that we're in a kind of daily, ordinary, preoccupied trance, and when we get less preoccupied, we open to the layers of energy that we haven't been paying attention to, and they actually have room and space to unfold themselves. So just to include that in your awareness, just to notice, okay, twitching, and not to make it wrong, just let it happen. Yeah, thank you. Okay, so a few comments on, I love your questions, and we'll be doing this also next week. I really wanted to have 2 weeks very much honing in on the practice itself. And then we'll be revisiting elements through the year. As you can probably garner from this, the letting go of thoughts and coming back to an anchor is not the end point of the meditation. We're not trying to get rid of thoughts. It's a support so that we can quiet enough so that we can see the reality of what's right here. So we can be here. The writer Francisco Varela, cognitive scientist and philosopher, says the purpose of calming the mind is not to become absorbed or empty, but to enable us to be present long enough to gain insight into its own nature and functioning. So coming back to the breath is a pathway of quieting so that we can then be fully present, fully here, really come home to what we are. And that's where mindfulness comes in. Mindfulness is that non-judging presence that notices what's happening and allows it. Notice and allow. There's not a doing. There's just a noticing and a letting be with mindfulness. And these are the two qualities. If there's two qualities you remember about mindfulness, there's this kind of wakeful registering of what's here. What is here? You know, sounds, sensations, the sensations of the breath, feeling of movement in the body, to notice it and to let it be there, to allow it, to have some openness. Now the challenge with mindfulness is that rather than allowing, we tend to fixate and fight what's here. So there's neither an openness or a real noticing. We kind of react. So I'd like to do is a final guided meditation, just a little bit on how to really be here with these two qualities of open and wakeful. And given the time, this will be our last piece that we'll do, and we'll just continue it next week, as I mentioned. Just as you just close your eyes, I'd like you to review the steps that we've done tonight. You can't too many times connect with your aspiration. If throughout your day your practice was to keep asking, okay, what really matters? Your life would be lived from a deep place of wakefulness and heartfulness. To sense your intention just for these few minutes to be here, to be open, to be awake. To give you a taste of some of the flavor of mindfulness, John Moffat, the poet, writes this. He says, to look at anything, if you would know that thing, you must look long at it. You must look at it long. To look at this green and say, I have seen spring in these woods, will not do. You must be the thing you see. You must be the dark snakes of stems and ferny plumes of leaves. You must enter into the small silences between the leaves. You must take your time and touch the very peace they issue from. You must enter into the small silences between the leaves. You must take your time and touch the very peace they issue from. So we sense our intention to be here. To meet this changing stream of experience with sacred presence, with a wise attention. To let your senses be awake. You might begin by just listening to sounds. They appear on their own, spontaneously. Nothing to do. Just letting your conscious awareness extend outward to receive the most distant sounds. Just sense or imagine that the edge of your consciousness has extended as far as the source of the sounds. Letting the edges of consciousness dissolve, just to sense that pure, empty awareness that extends without limit in all directions. The sky-like quality of mind that receives sounds. With that open receptivity, receiving the sensations that are here. The inquiry with mindfulness, what's here? What's happening? And then just to allow, to receive that in awareness. If something strong, like restlessness or sleepiness, to bring a soft, clear attention, to investigate with interest, with care. Just notice how every experience is a constellation of sensations playing out in awareness. If the mind drifts, as you know now, to simply notice what's happening and pause. Just relax into what's right here. We close together in a traditional way called dedicating the merit, which means that we sense our wish that our meditation and reflections tonight really be of benefit to all beings, that this awakening of heart and mind might ripple out and touch all beings, that all beings might experience loving presence, that all beings might touch a natural and great peace, and that all beings might awaken and be free. Namaste.
The teaching you have received has been freely offered. If you would like to contact the Insight Meditation Community of Washington to make a donation or to learn more about our programs, please visit our website at www.imcw.org.